And now, News Talk 1360 WCHL presents Art of Potential, an illuminating talk show about getting educated, getting hired, and getting inspired. Hosted by the staggeringly positive Kristen Heemstra, an experienced human resources manager and college admissions consultant. And now, here's Kristen on WCHL.
Hi, welcome to the Art of Potential. This is Kristen Heemstra, and I am so glad to have you joining us. We have a fabulous show in store for you. We are talking with Veronica Dagger today, and she is a journalist at the Wall Street Journal and who just wrote this fabulous article called Before You Choose That College. And what she did is just pure genius. She went and talked to financial advisors to get advice for parents and students about how to get the biggest bang for your educational buck. So what we're going to do is talk to her about some of the research that she discovered during this process. So welcome to the show, Veronica.
Thanks, Kristen. It's great to be on.
So first of all, what was your inspiration to do this type of an article?
Well, you know what? A lot of my neighbors in Brooklyn and some of my mom's neighbors out on Long Island in New York heard about, you know, have their friends have college, their friends' kids have college acceptance letters starting to come in, and they're trying to make a decision, and they're trying to decide, you know, the kids might, the students might want one thing, the parents might think something else, and there's a, you know, obviously a big part of the college decision is what you can afford and what you can't afford. So there's a lot of people talking about this that I know right now. So that kind of prompted that. And I kept just remembering my own experience this time of year, starting to get some of those letters in. That was an exciting time.
What school did you end up going to?
I went to Fordham in the Bronx.
Yep.
New York.
We have a lot of students from our area up there that really are enjoying it.
Oh, yeah. It's a great school.
So the first piece of advice, which I really appreciate, is encourage your child to select a career first and then a school.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, I think there's that whole idea of, you know, you find yourself when you're at college and you can explore different classes and take your time with it. But the fact is, when you do that, it can get really, really expensive. And so an advisor I spoke to said, you know what, there's another solution to this. There's another thing you can do. He said, you know, look into careers first. Do it as early as possible. Even he was saying even kids who are 13 and 14 should start thinking about their careers, which it was kind of funny when I first thought about it. But he's like, you know what, that's a really good point. So that way you can kind of have a better idea of what you want to do when you finally make that decision on what school to go to, because you might want to make sure the school you pick has the program you're looking for. So for example, in order to figure out what school, what career you want to look at, he says, talk to a professional career counselor. You know, have your son or daughter take career tests. You know, maybe Myers-Briggs or something like that. Get so they have a better sense of what kind of job they want when they become an adult. It's also really great, you know, and I think throughout this article, one of the big themes is accountability. It's getting the kids to start thinking consciously about what they want to do with their life, taking responsibility for that, realizing you're making choices. These choices are going to be expensive, have costs and benefits, and understanding all that behind there. One of the things he said is, you know, a lot of times, you know, parents have a friend, maybe that friend has the career that their kid might want to go into. Well, maybe see if your friend will let your child spend a few hours with them, or maybe spend a whole day, or even get an internship working in the veterinarian's office, for example, if your kid wants to be a vet. I had heard one financial advisor told me that they had their client's 13-year-old daughter actually did that, got a little internship in the vet's office, and she got a sense to see, you know what, this is hard work. And she got to see, you know, this isn't just, you know, playing with pets. This is really, you know, this is a job day in and day out. So I think it's a really interesting idea in order to explore those options. You know, some people will say, well, you know, the kid, you know, children, how are they going to know? They're too young. It's hard to figure out what you want to do. But at least, you know, having some of these experiences will maybe even help you narrow down some of those options. Any, I guess you can always change later, but this actually helps you vet out some of those things that you're thinking about. If you think you want to be a doctor and then you spend some time in a hospital and you realize you hate it, you know, that you just saved yourself, I don't even know how much time it will cost these days. So that was one idea I thought was really interesting.
It is, and I just like to piggyback on that. If you are a person in the Chapel Hill Carrboro City Schools area, there's a program that all high school students have access to called Naviance. And Naviance has a really nice Myers-Briggs generated career assessment and a strong interest inventory career assessment. Those are two big career assessments in the field that young people are using. The strong interest inventory is just interest-based. And the reason why it can be useful is it gives stepping stones. And to your point, Veronica, the earlier you start the kids, the more opportunity they have to really explore things as they go through. And sometimes you do find, like, kids will say, oh, I want to be a pediatrician. And then when they really realize that a pediatrician is usually treating sick children.
Right. And, you know. Yeah, it may not be as glamorous as they think it is. Yeah, that sounds like a really great program that, you know, I wish I heard more about those types of programs for folks. I think it's so helpful.
They are. And there's actually lots of great resources out on the web. I will point people to my website, artofpotential.com. There are lots of free career assessments out there, too. One of my favorite ones is Kingdomality. It ties everyone to a medieval career, which is just kind of fun,
cool.
You know, regardless of your age, to find out you should be a knight or, you know, whatever.
Oh, that's so funny. Check that out.
Yeah. And the other thing, too, is if your child is in college, all colleges have career offices. So your child can go to those, too, because it is, you know, college is a time for exploration. And I know, speaking from personal experience, I think I actually declared 5 different majors before finding one. So I understand that point really well.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So let's talk about the second piece of advice, which is don't promise your child you'll pay the entire tuition.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think a lot of parents, you know, most parents, you know, they really mean well. They want to say, you know, hey, you get into your dream school, and we'll figure it out. We'll foot the entire bill, and that's a great promise in theory. But when it comes down to it, you know, it could be really difficult to live up to, especially given the cost of tuition. Tuition at some schools it's so expensive now, and not to mention, you know, I heard so many stories of parents making this promise, but then they lost their job, or, you know, maybe they lost more in the stock market than they were expecting. Their retirement savings isn't what it was at one point. And so they had made this promise and now they can't live up to it and they just feel terrible. And so, you know, a lot of the financial advisors I spoke to said, you know what, just save everyone the trouble and don't make this promise just because you may not be able to live up to it. You know, it's one of those things that, you know, it could be well-meaning and heartfelt, but you kind of might want to scale it back a little bit. Say, you know, I can pay X amount, but if you want to go to a more expensive school, you have to borrow the money. Same thing, you know, bringing that accountability back into the picture. Also, you know, it's a whole lot of stress on parents and folks to foot these huge bills. So that's something parents really want to take seriously, you know. It's going to affect how many years they're going to have to work. You know, kids can always take a loan for school, but you can't take a loan for retirement.
Right.
There's no loans for that. So parents really, really need to think about that in the long run.
That's funny you say that, because we just had a gentleman on, Todd Washburn from Todd Washburn Financial Solutions, and that was his big tagline to parents, too. You can't take a loan out for retirement. And
no,
you don't want your children would rather you not come live with them.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And you may think you're doing them a favor now by, you know, paying all this money for their tuition, but this could come back to haunt you, because and this could come back to haunt them in a way too, because if you retire and you're out of money and you might end up having to rely on them, which happens, you know, quite a good deal to help pay for your health care or whatever you need when you're older. So you really want to think long and hard before you put these sort of statements out there. You know, and you can always, you know, I suppose, you know, of course, you can always take something back and say, you know, sit your son or daughter down. You know, our situation has changed, unfortunately, and this is what we're going to have to do, and this is what we can do. And, you know, this is the whole thing. You know, they're an adult, too. They're right. 18 or so. They're going to be going off to college. It's about time they have a real good sense of, you know, what the value of money is and what the value of the dollar is.
Absolutely, because the market does, I mean, during their lifetime, it will also be ebbing and flowing, and you know, having a safe place to experience some of those bumps is not a bad way to do it.
We'll be back to talk to Veronica in just a second, but because most of the kids in our community are going through this process, we went ahead and interviewed people in Chapel Hill to find out their advice, to find out what their experience is, and what they had wished they had done differently throughout paying for college. So let's hear right now from Debbie LeMay.
Hi, I'm Debbie LeMay, and I am the parent of a 28-year-old, an East graduate in 2001 who graduated from University of Maryland in 2005, and another daughter, Rory, who is currently 26, and she is a graduate of East in 2003 and graduated from UNC in 2007. I guess I would encourage parents to save if you can, but that's sometimes very difficult, and especially in these economic times. One thing that I probably would recommend is to encourage your kids to apply for loans. Loans can be harder and harder to get these days, but students should apply for loans, and not just to the school, any other scholarships or anything that's out there, and they can contact the career information centers at their schools, talk to the counselors at their high schools to see what is out there in the way of scholarships. The other thing that I would recommend is to encourage your kids to work in the summer. It might not pay for their college, but it can certainly help them with spending money and that type of thing. One thing that I learned as a parent and that I would really like to share with people, and this comes from being sort of the I'm not going to use the word victim, but I was in a second marriage. And although my children's father was technically responsible for helping with their education, that is not really viewed by colleges and universities. They're going to look at the income of your current situation. So even though my current husband really was not responsible for paying for their education on paper, that is what colleges and universities are going to look at when they're figuring out how much money to give. So consequently, my kids really didn't get any scholarships or money from schools, except, you know, Maryland did give my son a little bit of money, you know, sort of like academic money, but when you look at the whole cost of the education, it really wasn't that much. So I would recommend that you take that into consideration when you're thinking about things, because that was not something that I had ever thought of until I was in that process. And I had kids that I thought, oh, these schools will love to have my kids and give them money, but they didn't.
Thank you, Debbie. You are listening to Art of Potential on 1360 WCHL. We'll be right back with more.
You're listening to Art of Potential on WCHL. Once again, here's your host, Kristen Heemstra.
Welcome back. You are listening to Kristen Heemstra on the Art of Potential. I am talking with Wall Street journalist Veronica Dagger about how to, she went and interviewed many financial advisors about how to pay for college. And we're talking about her article, Before You Choose That College, that was in the March 14th, 2011. Was that actually in the journal? I pulled it off online.
It was. It was online and in the actual physical paper as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So the third piece of advice we have here is when deciding between an in-state public university on the one hand and a private university or out-of-state public university on the other, make your child responsible for at least some of the cost of choosing the more expensive option.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, some of the financial advisors I spoke to said, you know, this takes away the whole blank check mentality. Mm-hmm. Students, you know, it helps students weigh their education options, make them think, you know, they may be more likely to value their education when they have to bear some of the responsibility for the financial impact of that decision. So, you know, you might want to say, some of the advisors I spoke to said, you know, you might want to say to your kid, you know, if you choose to go to the in-state public university, then we'll pay for all 4 years. But if you choose to go to that private or out-of-state public university, then we'll pay for 3 years, and then you'll be responsible for 1 year. Also, a really great point, if a child goes beyond 4 years, the child's going to have to fund that additional cost. You know, it's not an unlimited, you know, you can be 40 and be, you know, been in college since you're 20, you know, 18, and that's okay. You know, that's, it's taking, I mean, that's an extreme example, right?
But,
you know, that's, you know, it's taking away that, you know, just, it's whatever it costs you, you're going to do it. That's not really a feasible reality for most families. So it's not unlimited supply of money to make your decision. And also just to be a better accountability of how much different education options cost. Because that might really help someone make their decision. It also help a student decide how much loans they want to take as well, because maybe they realize, you know, the more expensive option might not be worth it to them.
Right.
You don't know. You have to, you have to weigh all the pros and cons.
Right. And that gives them a sense of control about the situation, too.
Absolutely. I think it's always good to present options because you're speaking to them like an adult, which they are, and it's kind of making them think through it. And at the end of the day, it's their decision then. So they can't, hopefully they're not going to come back and blame you, mom and dad.
It's all your fault. I do have a funny story to share. My college roommate, when I first went to college, I started out at a small college called Hope College in Holland, Michigan. And it's a great little school. It's where all my family attended, and I laugh and tease and say it was where my parents sent me to get my MRS degree, because so many people out of my family ended up finding their spouse there.
But
one of the funny things is my roommate came from New Jersey, and she did not have a sense of money. And I learned this only when she got very upset because she looked at me and she goes, "I've run out of money." And I was like, "Oh, okay, you know, what happened?" And she goes, "Well, I don't have any more checks left."
Oh, God.
It was just one of those moments where you're like,
scary.
My goodness. You know.
You wonder. I always think financial accountability and responsibility earlier on is better than later on, because once you get out there and there's no mom and dad to keep sending you blank checks to fill out, then what happens? You know, next thing you know, you've got all this credit card debt. I mean, it's not setting people up for financial success in the long run. It's really a disservice to have just that unlimited money mentality. Doesn't help anybody. It doesn't help the U.S. economy.
Right. Yeah, we kind of went global with that.
Yeah.
All right. So the fourth piece of advice is make a deal with your child. Underperform and you're out.
One financial advisor actually did this with his own son, and he said, you know, listen, if you don't hit a certain GPA, we're going to consider college your first job, essentially, and this GPA is going to signify your job performance. And if you can't meet the minimum job performance, you're out. You're going to have to transfer to a less expensive school, or maybe, you know, we have to reassess this and say, you know, maybe you shouldn't be in college. You know, college isn't for everybody, and that's another thing that sort of came out in this reporting. You know, college is a great thing. You know, it helps a lot of people, but not everybody's meant to go to college. Maybe trade school is a better option. Maybe starting your own business is a better option for that person at that time. So, you know, it encourages people to say, you know, we need our students to be accountable. This advisor suggested, you know, sitting down with your child and saying, you know, this is what you're about to, if that child's about to go away. So, you know, we want you to have an idea of how much this is costing, and that you are, we are expecting a certain performance grade wise from you. And I'd like to sit down and sort of let's agree on a minimum GPA that we can have as a threshold that we can see measure your performance by. I mean, it sounds very business-like, but at the same time, it is, you know, it is pretty realistic expectation, especially if the parents are spending their money. And in terms of, you know, some people say, well, you know, my, you know, freshman year is all, you know, notoriously is difficult, an adjustment year, or that first semester, especially you're getting used to a lot of things if you're away. Well, you know, you, if you're a parent and a child, you want to factor that in as well. So maybe there's a grace period if that's what you're expecting, a sort of a tough adjustment, which is normal. But after that grace period is over with, you want to stick to your guns. You don't want to renege on this and keep postponing the promise, you know, while right. the kid's not really working hard. And, you know, you can all, that person can always come home if they are away, transfer schools, and sort of get their grades back up, and maybe they can go back to where they were or some other place. Or maybe they'll realize that they want to wait, and maybe this isn't the best option for them
at that
right
time.
Now. But, you know, and lots of times, you know, being ready to go to school, you know, it's a matter of maturity, so maybe mm-hmm. it's a maturity issue. Also, maybe sometimes they may go to the college and find out maybe it's not the right fit academically. So that's, yeah. you know, it's a valuable tool.
Yeah.
It definitely is. And when I taught at George Mason University, I taught the incoming freshmen, just kind of academic skills and career-based skills and things like that. And I love this because there are, I'd say out of the classes I taught, 9 out of 10 of my kids were there. They were ready to be there. They were participating. They were going to classes on their own. And they had the ability to manage themselves. So when they got in trouble academically, they knew they needed to put more hours in. But then you always had one, and you wondered why the parents sent them to school, because it was so clear they weren't ready to be there. And, you know, if they came, it was clear they had, you know, basically rolled in from the last party they were at and, you know, were just trying to sleep off until they could find the next party. And they didn't last long. And I equate it to driving down the road and just throwing your money out the window. Because it's really what you're doing.
It really is, yeah. And that's not helping. You know, the students doesn't want to be there. The parents are suffering also because they're spending all this money and out the window, like you said. So, you know, what's the rush? You know, wait a little bit until everyone, maybe that person needs to work a few years to get a sense of the value of a college degree and how that could translate financially. But maybe they'll discover that's not something they want to do anyway. So I think it's something to think about for parents. It may be tough to hear, but I think, like you said, you know, some people, you know, you got to do it when it's right for you. And it may not be right the second you turn 18 or
The second you graduate. You do you do want to have a difference. You want to have college be, you know, college level 1 instead of grade 13. And we even heard I did some interviews with some of the Ivy League admissions folks, and they are very open to kids taking a year off. They feel like they get a more mature and, you know, student who understands the value of the education and is ready to learn. They're not as burned out either, coming from a strenuous high school to going into a strenuous college.
Yeah. And even something like, you know, I heard someone say, you know, why don't, you know, that student spend some time traveling for a year just to sort of get a more global perspective, or maybe start up their own little business to get a sense of how the business world works.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, it's like, that's a really interesting concept.
It is, especially because we're going to that global market. I mean, that's how kids are going to, you know, the next generation is going to be making their living.
So. Yeah, for sure.
All right. And then the last piece of advice is to help children protect their health and finances from uncertainty and risk. And I have to admit, this one kind of was interesting to me because I never thought of this.
Yeah. I hadn't either, you know, because you think, you know, your parents, you're still sort of young. And if they're, especially they're paying for your stuff, you think, oh, but yeah, they can sort of make decisions for me if something bad happens, or they'll be there because maybe you live there in the summer or what happened, whatever. But yeah, once your child turns 18, once somebody turns 18, parents don't automatically have the right to make medical decisions, see the child's medical records, even make financial decisions. And, you know, this could be important, especially if someone gets sick, and even if they're at school or if they're abroad. It's just three relatively simple documents: healthcare directive, the HIPAA release, and the power of attorney. Kind of covers most of the bases for people, and that gives the parents ability to access the child's medical records and make decisions for the child's healthcare and finances if necessary. It's just sort of another protection that might set the parents' minds at ease. But it's also really good for the child too, because you know, it gets them starting to think about things like their health and gets them start to think about things like estate planning and yeah. and what that means, because so many people don't even do estate planning, and I'm sort of using that a loose term with this, but so many people don't even do it when they're in their 50s, they forget about
right.
it. But if you start doing this at, you know, 18 or whatever age when you're about to go to school, this really maybe gets you thinking down that path. One advisor I spoke to said, you know, this was really great for one of their clients whose daughter was going to London. When the advisor first brought it up with the client, they got really emotional because, oh, my baby's growing up and we're going to be separated. Oh, and you're telling me, oh, something bad could happen. But yeah, but the thing is, wouldn't you rather have that protection? Wouldn't you rather, you know, be prepared if something happens? And that parent got it. They understood that. And then it also started a dialogue between the mother and daughter eventually about things like estate planning and what it means just for their relationship in general growing up. It also helped the parent reassess their own estate plan and their things like even that we didn't even talk about in here, but, you know, their own will and had a conversation with their child about that. And that also, I think, is treating your student, your child, as an adult. You know, these are adult conversations. They can be maybe emotional conversations sometimes to have, but I think they're really important. I think we got to give our students, our kids, a little bit more credit in terms of the information they are ready to hear. And I think if you bring it up in a good way, it's really a healthy thing for everyone, because you never know what's going to happen. So I think it's not to be paranoid, but it's also just to be prepared. I think that it's better to be prepared than not.
Well, and it's to be responsible.
Right.
It's definitely to be responsible. Let's take another quick break, and then when we get back, I want to hear, you know, just some closing thoughts from you. So,
sure.
This is Kristen Heemstra. You are listening to Art of Potential. I am talking with Veronica Dagger, and we will be returning in a moment.
You're listening to Art of Potential on WCHL. Once again, here's your host, Kristen Heemstra.
Welcome back. This is Kristen Heemstra. You are listening to the Art of Potential show on 1360 WCHL. And I am talking to Veronica Dagger, who is a journalist with the Wall Street Journal. And she wrote an article recently on with advice from financial advisors for parents and students about how to get the biggest bang from your buck for your educational needs. What were some of the surprises that you found when you wrote this article, Veronica?
One of the big surprises was what a passionate response I got from not only advisors but from families, from parents who read this. I was really, you know, I had an idea this was an important issue, but how important of an issue and how sort of a hot button issue this was really took me by surprise. And I think that really speaks to the fact that people are definitely thinking long and hard about the decisions they're making, especially in light of the economy. I think the economy has a lot to do with it. I think people are really thinking about the amount of debt that their students are taking on. I think students are thinking long and hard about that amount of debt. I think parents are concerned that their child may graduate and not be able to find a job or graduate in a field they may not like, or that doesn't have great job prospects and are facing really, really high amount of loans. I mean, I've talked to plenty of people who said, you know, their child recently graduated and they've got a ton of loans and they've been looking for a year to find work and they're really nervous. And I think some of those stories have really gotten around. and made people think twice about some of the investments they're making. And choosing a college is an investment. So if you're going to spend that amount of money, you really want to make sure you're getting a return on that investment. And you're not putting yourself in for sort of a lifetime of financial jeopardy. So I think the passion and the interest in that really sort of took me by surprise. Also, I think that the differential between the public four-year and the private not the private nonprofit four-year, the cost in tuition, the differential in the tuitions also I found a little shocking. And also, you know, part of the article, we had a graph that showed, you know, how much the price of tuition has increased since, I think, what was it, 1980 or something like that, between 1980 and... And I guess it was 2002. I mean, just the price of tuition just keeps climbing and climbing. And that is just, I mean, it's just staggering when you think about it. Because right now it seems like college is an option for everybody. You can take loans, what have you. A lot of people say it that way. But you wonder down the road, is it going to be something only for the rich that they can afford? So that kind of gave me a little bit of pause, too. And also made me think about, you know, what kind of careers are we going to be having, you know, for the graduates, you know, in the next 10, 20 years who are going to have all this debt? Are they going to ever be able to pay it back? So that was also really, really of note to me when I was reporting this out.
Yeah, and to that point, too, when you are carrying that amount of debt, it limits what you consider acceptable for your first job, too. So,
exactly.
You know, you brought up a really good point, which I think all students or all young people should have some experience with the job market. Having their own little business, I think, is a great idea. But, you know, if you're tied into $500 a month to pay off your student loans, that's gonna impact how creative and risky you'll be, I think. I think you'd be
absolutely
more towards the conservative model.
Yeah, and it could throw off your, you know, how much you'll, you know, because when you first start a job or what have you, you probably want to start thinking about investing, you know, putting some money aside in a 401k. But, you know, if you're saddled with all this debt, you're probably going to think, you know what, I can't even afford to put $10 a month away in this thing, even if maybe you can. But it's just sort of the perception of that will be thrown off. And that's going to throw you off down the road, too, because you're going to miss out on all that sort of compounding and all that savings because you're so saddled with the debt. So, I mean, the ramifications of this aren't just for the 4 years or what have you, how many years you're in school. I mean, it's sort of a lifetime thing to weigh. It's a big decision. There's a lot at stake financially and personally, obviously.
There's one other strategy I'd like to bring up that I did hear that someone did, which was they had the student take out loans for all of their education, and upon graduation, then repaid the loans. And I thought that was kind of an interesting way to do it, too. They didn't tell the student they were going to do that at that time.
Wow.
That was their graduation gift, was that the parents paid off all the loans. And I thought, well, that, you know, the student definitely has a buy-in then, you know, because they are paying for the education. And I know when I went to school, students who were paying for their own education seemed to be more motivated than those who weren't.
You know. And how did that student do? Did that have that effect? Did that motivate them more, did you hear, or get them more focused on doing well?
Well, the student had done well. I mean, the student, to name a school, the student was at Georgetown. So it was one of those things where they had already clearly done well and were a motivated student. But then, you know, to walk away from a Georgetown education debt-free was pretty good. I don't know. I just thought it was kind of an interesting way to do it. I think if, and this is, you know, kind of a confession, but I think if my parents had me more on the line for the educational cost, like I had to cover all my own things. But I will also say when you're working to cover your own, anyway.
I think that's a really interesting idea. That child must have been very happy and really quite a nice gift.
Right,
that's an awesome gift. Wow.
Well, thank you so much for your time.
Oh, you're welcome. This was a lot of fun.
Do you have any closing thoughts or words you'd like to share?
I just, you know, I wish parents and the students and, you know, good luck in making their decisions and, you know, keep communicating about what you're thinking about it. And if you have a financial advisor, maybe talk it over with them and get their opinion, too. It might help to have them weigh in and look at the whole picture as well. And yeah, have a good fall semester, whatever you decide.
Thank you, Veronica. And next up, we're going to be hearing from local people about their college experience, how they're paying for it, the advice that they have. If you want more information on this topic, you can always go to Art of Potential website, and there is a tab there for paying for college, and it gives a bunch of different resources that you can use as you're going through this process yourself. You are listening to Art of Potential on 1360 WCHL. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Art of Potential on WCHL. Once again, here's your host, Kristen Heemstra.
Hi, you are listening to Kristen Heemstra on 1360 WCHL, Art of Potential. We are going to listen to what the people in Chapel Hill, the comments they have about how they are approaching paying for college, and hear some advice from people who have already been down this road. Let's hear from Amanda Galvin.
My first four choices for college for undergrad were all private schools, and UNC Chapel Hill was my fifth choice of school, but it was completely free because I was a North Carolina teaching fellow, and so I decided that I would rather go to undergrad without having to incur any debt.
Technically, North Carolina scholars, as well as a lot of the ROTC programs, are considered loans. Even though your education is paid for, you do owe them 4 years or 7 years, depending on what type of program you do, of service after. If you leave the state with the teaching fellows, if you leave the state of North Carolina prior to teaching your 4 years, you actually owe them money for your education. So when you're looking at programs like this, it's very important to make a commitment, not just for your 4 years, but for the next 4 years beyond that or 7 years beyond that piece. Now let's hear from Deidre Curran.
My name's Deidre Curran. When considering the cost of college, my parents have been planning for a long time, so any good public school will be fine.
Deidre's parents may have used North Carolina's 529 plan, which is a great plan for saving money for college. If you want to know more about it, go to CFNC, College Foundation of North Carolina, cfnc.org, and you can sign up for that program. Now let's get some advice from Carolyn Cotton.
My advice to students going off to college is take out the least amount of loans, try to get grants, because in the future, loans will hurt you.
The best way to get scholarships and grants in college is to look at colleges that are 1 to 2 tiers below what you would qualify for. Those are schools where you would be really, really wanted, as opposed to schools you're competitive with where you look like the rest of the students. The schools that really want you, they are the ones that are more likely to give you money, grants, and scholarships. Let's hear from Keith Curtis about how finances impacted his decision for college.
It was probably one of the biggest decisions on why I went to the small school in Ohio, and they gave me a half tuition scholarship. And like a lot of small private liberal arts universities, the sticker price for the school was really expensive, but they found ways to meet me more than halfway. So between grades and ACT scores, I got a half tuition scholarship, and then that put it, once my parents filled out the FAFSA, it ended up costing about as much as the state school in Illinois would have. So it was a big factor, not the only factor, but a big one.
Keith represents a trend that we often see where a student applies for an institution and then they come back with a nice package saying, please, please come. Never discourage your child from applying to a school, even if you do have sticker shock from it, because you don't know what the school will respond with. Now let's hear from East Chapel Hill High School's athletic director, Ray Hartsfield, who also happens to be the father of two college-oriented children.
I started looking early for scholarship opportunities, you know, scholarship.com, and just go through every avenue. You never know what kind of money is out there. One of the things we did early on was decide on a school, because you'll find if you go to that school's website, there's a lot of different scholarship and grant opportunities just inside the school. Guilf is a prime example. They have so many different scholarships available to students. And you just have to research it. Like when we did Johnson and Wales, we found three different things that Brittany qualified for that could total up to $15,000. You just got to do some research.
Ray brings up a really good point, that there are a lot of schools that have scholarships available to students. You can access those monies, A, when you first apply, and a lot of schools you'll be put into the kettle and be considered for it, or B, after you're accepted, you can also internally apply for loans. That is one way that you can get money for college. There's actually three different distinct ways. One, like we just talked about, is actually going to the school itself for money. The second way you can get money is privately, and these are through private scholarships. They're often given through big organizations or companies, Coca-Cola, Rotary Club. These people all can give you contributions towards your college education. If you want to learn more about those types of things, then you need to go to your local CIC, which is your Career Information Center in your high school. The folks there often send out newsletters, and they have files full of applications that you can fill out. And then the third way that you can get money for college is through the government. And the government has a really big organization called Sallie Mae, which handles all government loans. To access money for government, you need to fill out something called the FAFSA form, F-A-F-S-A. And that's on the web. And as a taxpayer, as the person paying for the education, you will fill that out when your taxes are complete. That then goes into the Sallie Mae pot, and Sallie Mae determines how much money you're eligible for. Now, the key to that is to get it done sooner rather than later, because like any other organization, the more money it has, the more likely it is to give you money. It's when the money starts to run out that you find the more stingy loans coming through. Now let's hear from school counselor Jessica Harris.
My advice would be to start now. There are tons of money out there, but you have to know how to find it. And you got to start by researching. You research the colleges you're going to, go to their websites, go to their financial aid sites, look at every one of the merit scholarships that they have, take advantage of every scholarship opportunity, create yourself a web search. Just because you're in high school doesn't mean that they're going to get every scholarship opportunity your way, but you apply to for all of those, and then you research your own, you contact organizations, and corporate people give money away too. So you have to start early. You have to be very aggressive and deliberate about the process. And you have to be, you know, have a plan and be focused and determined, because the money's out there, but it's not going to just fall in your lap. You've got to go look for it. It's like an Easter egg hunt.
Jessica brings up a point that all counselors find very frustrating, which is often we have a lot of scholarships that go untapped by students because they don't want to go through the hassle of filling out the application. Fill out those applications. Sometimes you see big scholarships for up to $10,000 and one applicant. So in cases like that, be sure you are that one applicant that's in there. You are listening to Kristen Heemstra, president of Art of Potential. If you want to know more about this, again, go to the Art of Potential website. Also, we do a lot of free seminars at the Chapel Hill Chamber of Commerce, and you can go to our website to learn about when those are. We will be talking about college admissions as well as how to get a job and how to find meaning in your work. Thank you for listening to the Art of Potential. This is Kristen Heemstra. We'll see you next week.